Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
And tame, and tame again.
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
England versus USA in the company of the worst person from the year 2014. BBC versus ITV in the opening title sequences. John Hartson plants his flag in Ellie McCoist's major tournament co-commentary turf. Mark Clattenburg breaks the referee punditry code of honour. A technical dismantling of Bebeto's iconic World Cup goal celebration. Who should be wrapped in proverbial cotton wool and when? Dinosaurs, pigeons, and the ultimate vindication for football's long-held obsession with that White Stripes song. Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 211 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry and with me for the adjudication panel today is David Walker. How's it going?
Very good. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Has the World Cup burst into life yet? It's the eternal question and one I'm going to keep asking until it actually has burst into life.
Well, if it hasn't yet, today as we record is the final day for every team to play once. So it should have, really, by this point. But I think it has. We've had two big upsets. We've had a couple of big scores. And we've also had an important part of the World Cup's life cycle is a smattering of dull nil-nils, which we had. So.
Oh, I thought you were going to mention the Japanese clearing up in the stands after a game.
There is that, yes.
And the dressing room. A bunch of Mark Nobles.
I was thinking about this. Do you think that, like, I mean, I know it's an intrinsic part of their culture, but like they must get sick of it. Like, oh God, we've got to clean up again.
Got to keep the reputation going.
You have to do
someone,
it now. Yeah.
Someone somewhere is getting five-digit numbers on Twitter for this. You have to do it.
Yeah.
Speaking of social media heroes, alongside you for the adjudication panel today is Nick Miller. Welcome home for your big, massive World Cup trip, Nick Miller.
Thanks. This is the perfect way to cap it off.
How was it? Grueling?
Incredibly grueling, but genuinely brilliant. For anyone that doesn't know, I travelled from London to Doha via the scenic route. We went through 17 countries in 17 days, talked to people along the way about the World Cup and so on. It was me and the Athletic's Laurie Whitwell, along with a videographer. And
what's the team spirit like amongst you three?
It was pretty good. Some moments of tension broadly involving Laurie kind of wandering down from the hotel most mornings 20 minutes after we said we would and saying, oh, sorry, lads, I didn't realise you were waiting.
That would be great after the 16th country, I think.
Yeah, very much so. But other than that, few little gripes.
Wow. No, letting it all out here. Excellent. Only one place for it, really.
I couldn't say anything actually on the trip because that would make things awkward. So I'm just going to say it on a well listened to podcast instead.
You do learn a lot about people on trips, whether they're work trips or if you're on like, you know, some stag deal
live
or holiday with people,
tour,
people,
yeah,
you,
yeah,
people
sure.
You don't know. Yeah, when there's a sort of loosely agreed meeting time, and you learn a lot in that space of like in the hotel waiting room. Who's getting annoyed, who's early, who deems 3 minutes past the meeting time to be too late or acceptable.
This can happen within the space of a stag do as well.
Like, yeah.
Within the space of a weekend, you can go from not knowing someone to really enjoying their company to being utterly done with them for that very specific reason as well. It's absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's amazing, the life cycle of a friendship. But Nick, all this was a lead up to really... having heard about this arduous trip with its various niggles and its 17 countries. I've got one more potential stop for you. Tonight, Friday the 25th of November, at the Indigo at the O2, it's England versus USA, and it's hosted by Dapper Laughs.
Hang on, Dapper Laughs, first thing, Dapper Laughs is still a thing. He's still knocking around, is he?
I don't think he is still a thing.
Oh, right.
Which is very much the strange thing about this whole situation. But
2015 social media controversialist Dapper Laughs is back on headlining.
Doors 4 p.m. kickoff 7 p.m. is a lot of potential Dapper Laughs before the football starts.
We haven't heard a lot about Dapper Laughs in the last few years. So does this mean that he's sort of toned his shtick down? In which case, what's he doing now?
There's two options, I think, for Dapper Laughs. Either he's toned it down and remained repentant for his disgusting behaviour, or he's sort of turned ironic and sort of spiralled back on itself. I don't know. I'm assuming the latter has to be.
In many ways, it's a shame that Jack Pitbrook is in Qatar at the moment, because he would be all over going to that and writing a piece about it, wouldn't he?
I suspect, though, Dave, the masses will be swarming to Sean Williamson and Box Park, really, won't they? That's the solid option.
Speaking of people being sick of things that they've done once but now have to do every single time, watching him sing Something Inside So Strong before the game against Iran the other day.
He might do Star Spangled Banner.
Hopefully. I hope he does. I hope he mixes it up a bit.
Sweet Caroline getting another airing. A few more royalties on that front. Right, it's time for the adjudication panel. First of all, really enjoyed this tweet from NW, who said, if a Marvel film, Nick, had a World Cup match on in the background of a scene, it would be Poland versus Mexico. Don't know why that's right, but it is, isn't it? It's pure World Cup, isn't it, Poland-Mexico? Almost timeless.
Yeah, I haven't... There's no need to even check whether they've even played each other in the past. It just fits perfectly, doesn't it?
Yeah, played in 1974, I think, Dave, but it's sort of era-spanning kind of fixture and kind of sort of sums up the World Cup a little bit. Sort of two teams who really oughtn't play each other at any other time, pitted together in a very, very credible scenario.
Yeah, I wonder if they ever have played each other in a friendly. Doesn't feel like they should have done. But Mexico especially are the foundation to this particular recipe. They are just quintessentially World Cup. And Poland, certainly in the sort of last 10 years or so, have just become, again, have become a bit of a fixture, never ever do anything. They're both quite similar in so much that they deliver exactly what you expect. Mexico will get to the second round, will get knocked out. Poland will not go through. Lewandowski will not perform like he should do, and rinse and repeat.
You'd be amazed to know they've actually played each other 7 times in international friendlies.
Oh, wow.
Between 1973 and 2017. Maybe it's a Catholic thing, Nick. Get them together, they'll be all right.
Reaching hands across the Atlantic in the name of Catholicism.
Maybe they're just
embracing their togetherness as well. They have realised that they are extremely well copy, so just come together every few years to try and recreate that magic.
Yeah, lovely stuff. As we reach the end of the first round of group games, we had a glimpse of all 32 teams by the end of this day. It's incumbent on us really to focus on the big issue, which is who's got the better opening titles, BBC or ITV. Quite a difficult task this year. I don't think either of them have covered themselves in glory, Dave. Should we start with the BBC, which is a very kind of odd affair. It's very much a departure from the standard. It's not unpleasant, but let's hear a bit of it. Very weird Mowbray.
Now, this is interesting because up to this point, I haven't heard this. I've only seen it. Seen it in the office with the sound off. I quite like the graphics.
The graphics are great.
Sort of kaleidoscopic.
Really nice colours.
Yeah.
I'm quite glad they haven't gone for the sort of classic trope of slightly reductive music to do with that country.
Absolutely.
Over the top of it, which you could... I don't know whether it's a deliberate choice because of the country involved this time, but it's a trap that is far too easily fallen into.
For sure.
A little bit of Barry Davies at the end there, which is nice. The Guy Mowbray sort of mixed in as if it was some sort of dance remix or something is a bit weird.
It's a strange one.
Bold choice.
I mean, it's a sort of striking bit of vocal. It did get me thinking. I was trying to think what it reminded me of, and I think it might be this from the mid-1990s. Yes, that's police camera action with Alistair Stewart. That must be that. Presumably, Nick was the inspiration. I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, you can't, I mean, it's the only possible. It's the only possible theory, isn't it? The long-awaited nod to the opening titles of Police Camera Action.
Yeah, let's move over to ITV now. This is a completely forgettable piece of music, Dave, and I say that knowing full well someone's going to tweet me tomorrow and say, well, actually, it's this quite beloved piece from a mid-range composer. I don't care about that. I don't think it's supposed to be a memorable piece, but the artwork, which is obviously useless for us to discuss on the podcast, is beautiful. They've gone down the animation route, and I'm very happy with them.
It has a slightly more traditional feel than BBC, which is probably maybe the opposite way around that you'd expect. Of
it does look quite BBC-y, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But they've gone down, Nick, they've gone down the kind of try and get as many iconic players depicted in various vaguely relevant situations as they can, which I think is a solid option visually for an opening title sequence.
Yeah, it's the various iconic characters at the World Cup travelling to the World Cup, the looks of things, by various different modes of transport. I kind of don't know where they got that idea from. But they slightly curiously
if you look very, very closely, very closely in the background, you with those two little people at the back in a car.
It's Nick at the back getting his camera stolen.
Oh, yeah, we got asked Cameron if anyone in Breda in the Netherlands is carrying around a suspiciously shiny looking set of camera equipment, then give us a shout.
It's whilst it is obviously sort of, I suppose you would say that is classical music, right? But it's not. It doesn't strike me. It's not classical music in the same way as
that. Like, might have been reappropriated.
It's not like a symphony, is it? It's It's more. It's almost like golden era Hollywood style, sort of Lawrence of Arabia vibe.
Yes, it was. Oh, that might be it. Actually, yeah, that could be it.
Is it Arabia? Nah, close enough.
Yes, indeed. Right, let's stay on the domestic broadcaster front. John Hartson. Going strong, Dave, for the Ally McCoist cult co-commentator crown at this World Cup. So many delightful moments from him, particularly the way he pronounces the word ridiculous. But I think just edging ahead of that was this moment from the latter stages of USA versus Wales.
Brennan Johnson, Johnson, yeah, down this right-hand side. Fresh legs. We need Brennan Johnson to run in behind. Use that energy, young youthness he's got about him.
Not quite at his running an absolute mock peak, Dave, but I do like young youthness.
Well, the best kind of youthness to have, I think.
Yeah.
I like John Hartson. I do. I think you're right to put him in. He's sort of in the same sort of sphere as Ally McCoist. He's not quite as good as Ally McCoist, but he does have that same endearing quality to him. And in my experience, a very nice man as well. Very big man, very nice man.
Yeah, big-hearted, I sense. There's a bit of give and take with John Hartson, Nick. I mean, as I say, McCoist has clearly been moved into the elite-level fixtures, no question. And Hartson has now moved into that space. Surprisingly, I thought he'd just get Wales games. But no, he's moved into kind of the more kind of hipster's choice games, is the best way of putting it. But you do get these moments of delight, and then occasionally you do get things like him whinging about an offside flag going up too late, which is co-commentary from 2017 that we don't really need anymore, do we?
I quite like those little moments of comfort, like they're sort of familiar things.
Make you feel better, right? Football intellectually.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing that does annoy me, but I know it shouldn't annoy me, so it is quite nice to hear, you know, someone else get annoyed about it as well. I'm not gonna Ally McCoist, I'm not gonna go on too much about my very exciting trip. But I think the highlight of it was sitting next to Ally McCoist in the media centre of before Senegal, Netherlands. I made him laugh with a very kind of low level quip about England. And then as he was getting up to go up to the gantry, he patted my shoulder and told me to enjoy the game.
Oh, fucking hell.
Superb.
I wasn't actually jealous about any of this trip right up until now.
It was genuinely sensational. Yeah.
Did Did you introduce yourself to him? Did he just see that you were in the same sort of bit as him and just, how are you, mate, sort of thing?
No, we were sat down on the same kind of bank of tables, and England-Iran was on the TV, and he was sat a couple of places down from me. I elbowed my way into a conversation.
That's the only way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's the only way to do it. Like a girl you fancy.
Exactly, exactly. Sensational.
Oh, lovely. Thank you for bringing that story to this podcast. More on Ali McCoist very shortly. But first, this is from RYZ, who has alerted me to YouTuber Ben Foster and friend reacting to England versus Iran. Only one real phrase to keep count of here.
Bellingham, what a header that is, by the way!
That's 2-0!
That is two!
Come on!
Look at all that is, by the way!
Lovely.
That was some finish, by the way.
Oh, we missed a goal.
5 days with 3-0. Stop talking about shirts, by the way.
This is a really impressive first game of the tournament, by the way. Oh! Ooh. Wow, there you go. Iran have just scored one, by the way. Rashford just scored the second touch of the game, by the way.
Seven, by the ways.
Wow.
Of sort of varying tenuousness there, Nick.
Yeah, a few incorrectly deployed there. Bellingham, what a header that is, by the way, fine.
That's absolutely the gold standard, isn't it?
That's textbook. Iran have scored, by the way. No, absolutely not. No, I'm not having that.
Mm. It did feel quite forced in the end, Dave. I mean, admittedly, we're playing something of a...
I think the worst one was stop
cheap
talking
shot by pulling it all together.
Well, sure, but I think the worst one was stop talking about football shirts, by the way. That's like completely ridiculous.
It's against the very spirit of, by the way.
Yeah.
But very much locked into football speak is Ben Foster. It's a tough watch, that full TikTok video. I'll level with you, let alone to edit it down to its raw essentials. Wouldn't recommend it. I would recommend this, though. This was great. If there's one thing that defines broadcasting at major tournaments, Dave, it's the kind of almost like international call-up employment of Sky Sports pundits on ITV, for example. It just feels, at first you think, are they going to water themselves down, as they have done in previous tournaments? But it was great to see Roy Keane and Graeme Souness properly going at it. This wasn't for show. This was genuine, you know, conversational irritation.
He's not looking, and I think that is a penalty for me.
No. All this will do is encourage diving. He's dragging him down. He's dragging
Roy,
him down.
You're not listening to what Laura said. It's a directive from the referee.
That's exactly what she said, yeah.
It's a directive.
To encourage diving.
This is not about opinions. That's a fact. The guy wasn't looking
at
the ball.
Well, I'm here to give my opinion. That's not a penalty.
No, this is not about our opinions. It's about the laws of the game.
What are we here for? I'm here to give my opinion.
Their interpretation.
That's not a penalty.
The interpretation, the new law
that's
is...
That's my opinion.
The new law is that... If you're not
I'm here to give my opinion. I don't think that's a penalty.
That's
I'm here to give my opinion. That's not a penalty in my mind.
I've heard you say it 10 times.
Yeah,
I want to say it again.
I don't think it's a penalty.
Well, let someone else speak.
Go ahead.
You'll learn a lot more if you listen rather than talk all the time.
No problem. So,
Souness here.
It's so good.
What makes Souness so bulletproof here is that he can play the I'm older than you card to pretty much anybody, even Roy Keane, who feels not ancient, but feels sort of, you know, hard to dominate these days. But yeah, Souness just basically sort of coming out on top, I would say.
Yeah, I think he does just about retain the high ground. Nearly let himself down. He was very close to dropping an F-bomb.
Yes.
He had to pull himself back from the brink, and he really did get... very, very irritated there. I wonder whether, because obviously these two are not unfamiliar to each other. It's not like they don't normally meet. They obviously have done plenty of games at Sky together. But I wonder, because they're outside of their sort of domestic week in, week out Sky Sports situation, do they feel that, like, it doesn't matter as much? We can kind of just go off script because...
I think so, because it's kind of it's very self-contained, Saudi Arabia versus Argentina. No one's going to be talking about that game again in a punditory sense. Like, it won't be something they go back to and say, oh, do you remember that row between them? I think that there's a sort of shorter shelf life of this sort of thing, Nick. So they can, and I said this before, kind of let their hair down because it's not going to be an ongoing narrative for them.
Did ITV clip this up as social media content Sky do? And with a kind of unbelievable row on in Argentina, Saudi Arabia.
They treated it fairly sort of jokily, I think. But
did feel genuine, though, because I think we all have a radar for when this stuff is maybe forced and when it's not. And I think these two and this sort of chimes with what I've heard about them sort of off air as well. I think they both have a switch. They can both be very nice and are probably very nice most of the time. But I think both of them have a moment where they cross the line and that's it, they're sticking to their guns on whatever the thing is they're talking about. And this was just one of those moments. They really did. And it was a bit, you could see the other, it was Joe Cole and Laura Woods, I think, and they were both sitting there sort of looking at each other going, oh God, where do we
Joe Cole played the innocent bystander role quite well, Nick, in the end. I think there was a kind of hint of a joke afterwards, was like, no, I'm not getting into this whatsoever. No,
he's well advised to stay out of that one. Well, the other thing I quite like about it, which is kind of inherent to most of these rows that happen, is that they're not really looking at each other because they're sort of angled vaguely towards each other.
It's difficult, isn't it?
But not really directing their arguments at each other, which lends it a slight air of passive aggression, which I think really adds something to it.
Souness looks down, sort of in the direction of Keane, but look down to the floor, which again, just a very subtle detail.
Yeah, Keane's not big on eye contact at all, sky or otherwise. He sort of tends to sort of look into the middle distance as he tries to talk someone down without getting too loud in the process. It's very controlled, but Souness is too much of a Rolls Royce, isn't he, really, in a pundit sense.
It's funny you make the point about the age, though, because what, 20 years, Souness probably on 15 on Keane or 10, I don't know, but they obviously he's from a different generation of players.
Yeah.
Keane's career was only just was getting going as Souness retired and became a manager. Mm. But they sort of, looking at them side by side, they look quite similar age almost these days.
Souness is ageless. It's mad. It's like, cryogenically frozen. I think we will be returning to this theme later on in the tournament. But speaking of little benchmarks for a classic World Cup, I've been waiting for this. I've been dreaming of it. And John Murray on BBC Radio 5 Live, finally delivered. Here he is talking about Mexico striker Henry Martin.
Comes towards the ball and looks to just lay the ball off, play little triangles. He'll be doing that a lot in this game.
Yeah, he plays for the America club in Mexico.
Yes! It's classic, isn't it? It's great. It's like sitting down to a medieval banquet, Nick. It's lovely. Just classic.
Magnificent. Kind of reading it off a card like sort of nan reading a foreign name. Yeah, it's excellent.
But that particular club, I mean, you can't say it any other way. If you'd said he plays for America in Mexico,
it's slightly the one sort of mark off for this is that they are called Club America. So work. But I love the construction. I love it. It's classic. It's timeless, and it sort of retains that air of mystique you need about a World Cup. Nick, bit of distance.
Yeah, exactly. And said with that kind of, if that's what they will name their clubs over there, kind of air to it as well.
Yep.
Lovely.
Yep, perfectly lovely done. Indeed. Later on in that game, this is from listener Jamie. Here's Matty Upson on 5 Live, damning Mexico midfielder Hector Herrera with faint praise.
He is getting everywhere, Hector Herrera, at the moment. I mean, he's taken a really different role, actually. He's normally a bit of a break-up play merchant at times, but he's far more attacking for Mexico.
Yeah, really positive, isn't he?
Where does this stand in the merchant stakes, Dave? Are you having a break-up play merchant?
Bit of a break-up play merchant.
It's not a frivolous thing, is it? Yeah. It's actually quite an important thing. I don't know, is that merchant territory? Maybe it is.
I think it is merchant territory because it is something to be slightly looked down upon, maybe. He's only there to break up the play.
Yeah, as all other merchants are. It's like tap-in merchant, speed merchant, all that sort of stuff. Step-over merchant.
One-dimensional sort of aspect to it.
That's all he does kind of thing. But Nick, it's mid-table merchanting, isn't it? It's kind of all right. It rolls off the tongue fairly well.
Yeah, it's fine. You know exactly what it means. It is slightly kind of being sniffy about, is the water carrier type thing, being looking slightly down on a vital aspect of the game. But it's fine. It's fine.
And also, good to see that Matty Upson's doing his homework on Hector Herrera, if anything. Sort of lends an air of authority about it. Haven't got the audio for this, so you'll just have to take my word and indeed Arpan Banerjee's word for this. He says, "Hi, Adam. During the VAR check prior to the Lewandowski penalty miss for Poland against Mexico, Mark Clattenburg, who is basically the Peter Walton for Fox TV, said, 'All we ask for is consistency.' Surely he's not allowed to say that. He can't ask for consistency, Nick. Arpan's bang on here. Referees should be getting involved in this tedious refereeing discourse.
This is the thing I always wonder about with when players go into punditry. It's like, when they're players, they must complain about pundits slagging them off all the time. And then when they go into punditry, they're all slagging. So I've always been fascinated by the point at which that switches, where they forget that this is going to piss off the players down there and they just do it anyway. So presumably that must happen to referees as
this
well.
This is the first chink in the armour I've seen in any sort of refereeing punditry.
Yeah, I mean, they must, as with other with the players, they must listen to how pundits talk and then just kind of and just absorb that language. And you know, when they're in an unfamiliar situation, they just fall back on that. But yeah, very odd.
Betrayal, Dave. It's betrayal.
It's a baffling thing for a referee to say. What I wonder, does he genuinely believe that, or is it learned speak? Is he saying it because he thinks he should say it and he's heard other people say it? Because if he thought in any detail about his thousands of games that he refereed, he would obviously come to the conclusion that it's quite hard to be consistent all the time, right? Like, it's mad. And
people's, you know, demands for consistency just ignore the fact that the two situations they're comparing are not the same. Like, they are vaguely related. The moving of the goalposts when it comes to refereeing consistency is infuriating, and it really needs to be blown open for the public to realise.
For anyone who is watching Fox Sports, can I request that you just keep your ear out for him to mention common sense next? So just let us know.
Yes, thanks. Absolutely. Now,
I don't know why they don't get the referees to come out after the game.
He would. He'd do it.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Now, of course, a little storyline bubbling away in the background of this World Cup is Cristiano Ronaldo's severing of his relationship with Manchester United. Ronaldo himself, Dave, released a statement on Twitter via the Apple Notes app on his phone. Alex Ames writes and says, "I know he's busy at a World Cup, but he seems too big for Apple Notes." It's a fair shout. This is too Bob behaviour.
I thought the same, to the point where I sort of had to do a double take when I first saw it. I thought, is this some sort of parody or something? Because Ronaldo, obviously, so everything about him is the image and obsessed with perfection. You'd have thought he'd get someone to knock up a nice graphic with a statement on it.
Gold on black, logo at the top, Nick. That's what I would expect. Exactly. I know it's last minute, presumably last minute stuff, but come on, mate.
But would you... Surely he's got people. Maybe he doesn't have people with him. Maybe maybe his people aren't allowed in the kind of
could get his VPN on his laptop set up quick enough to get in touch with him.
Yeah, I don't know. You would have thought that his people would provide him with a template as well. You're going to release
just in case.
Yeah, just in case. Just all you have to do is just like notes, but you just have to tap it into this bit here. It will look lovely.
Can you imagine? I can't get it to work. Can someone give me a call? Ronaldo, though, a free agent at the World Cup, Dave, a magical place for any footballer to be.
Yeah.
It's like going on holiday after you finish school, just before uni. It's that thing, isn't it? Just not a care in the world. But he's in the shop window, isn't he? He's officially in the shop window.
I mean, yeah, he is. It is. Normally, it's the preserve of and I suppose he obviously is quite old, but normally it's the sort of really important player for a middling to lower nation. Gareth Bale's sort of nearly there. He's so important for their nation, a sort of 38-year-old centre-back, still just ticking, his fitness is being ticked over so he can make the last tournament.
Hasn't played a minute of club football this season, but yeah. He's so crucial to them, isn't he, Dave?
Exactly. And yet here we are with Ronaldo.
Despite technically, Nick, Ronaldo being in the shop window in the sense that it is incumbent on him to attract a new employer, he's just not a very in-the-shop window-y player. What else is he going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
At this moment, that he's going to surprise anyone and go, oh, well, fair enough.
Although he does literally look like somebody, if there's any sort of human being who could literally be in a shop window, he is sort of, it's him, isn't it,
mannequin.
Really?
Yeah. Shave his head and just stand there naked. I don't know, maybe we should help him out. Maybe the media should help him out. For all upcoming Portugal games in this tournament, he should be designated as the one to watch.
Don't sleep on
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Well, a good interview might be to get Gary Breen to interview him about the experience of being in the shop window.
Fallacy, Nick Miller. Common fallacy.
Oh, hang on.
Gary Breen's contract had not expired by the time he embarked on the World Cup with Ireland. It may have expired during the tournament. But
fucking hell. Yeah, right, I know. Jesus Christ.
Then
Hal Robson-Kanu.
This is an incredible example. As Ellis James also pointed out the other day, Hal Robson-Kanu scored that amazing goal against Belgium a day after his West Brom contract expired. It cannot get better in terms of major tournament shop windowness than that, Dave. It is perfect. Could someone put themselves in a shop window better than that?
No. But then where did he go to? Did he get re-signed by West Brom? Where did he end up?
I don't think he was at West Brom. I think he'd left Reading, I think.
Left Reading and then joined West Brom.
West Brom. Sorry. So it was a little bit low-key.
Blue stripey teams.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'm not going back to re-record that. Everyone knows what I meant. Mark McKillen follows up with this, Nick, says, are Canada the most in-the-shop window team at the tournament? And this is very much a thing, isn't it? Sort of a set of players who are coming through together and, you know, potentially after the tournament going their separate ways, say Senegal 2002 being the ultimate shop window team of World Cup.
I thought you meant initially, the team. Canada have been bought by Saudi Arabia.
Wouldn't put it past them. We can turn this lot into World Cup challengers within 5 years. That could work. Ultimate sports washing, just buying a whole country instead of just a club.
I mean,
and if you're going to buy a whole country, then Canada's the one, isn't it?
Going for it.
Yeah, well, vast land, famously kind of pleasant people, nice cities.
I do think
two languages.
To be slightly more serious from your original question, they probably are, I think, right up there in terms of their players. Yeah, there were a lot of, obviously you've got Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David, who are the two sort of top level European players. For the rest of them, they were all quite impressive, but you know, I hadn't really heard of many of them. So they all did feel very much like they could be appearing on some sort of January transfer window. Club X is looking at.
Well, that's it. I mean, is the January shop window for a major tournament more effective than a summer one, Nick? I think it might be, because the January window is obviously notoriously difficult to do business in. But if you've got this extra factor pushing it over the edge, a player who's just impressed at a tournament, that could get some business going.
Yeah, it's very much, it feels like it's going to be very much a home for the panic buy this January.
But it won't be a panic because he did so well in those two games. Did you see him?
It'll still be a panic buy, but it'll lend a sort of false air of logic to the panic buy. I think there's also I don't know whether this is just in my kind of narrow little part of the world, but there was a subset of the shop window thing with Canada through Richie Larea, who is a Nottingham Forest player, but he's on loan, I think, back at FC Toronto. And all the Forest fans I follow were going, "Oh, he's doing really well. Maybe we should recall him.
Oh,
we should bring him back. He'll solve all our problems." Forgetting the fact that he signed last January and didn't get a look in for the whole season in the Championship, so why he'd be any good in the Premier League, who knows? But
and now he's impressing in a completely different context that bears absolutely no relation to Premier League football. Yeah,
But that doesn't matter. Get him back in.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Other options for the shop window, Dave? Japan. I mean, if they don't sign for Celtic, that is. Someone suggested Saudi Arabia are the shop window team, but none of their players want to leave because they get paid so much to play there. I can't see that happening.
There's no real precedent for that, is there?
No. Samuel Jaber moving to Wolves and not playing is about as good as it gets.
So Saeed Alawara in 1994, he didn't get a move, did he, off the back of that amazing goal?
I got a feeling he did.
Did he?
Let's have a look. I'm thinking sort of Belgium or something. Let's have a look. No, he didn't. He played his entire career at Al-Shabaab. 238 goals in 588 games. If anyone was going to do it was going to be him. Right, keep an eye on that shop window. But next up, we're all now familiar with the newfangled stats appearing at the bottom left of our screens, Nick. My favourite one so far for the following scenario is receptions between midfield and defensive lines. So which players are receiving the ball in the hole, essentially. And I do wonder if he hadn't been binned off in slightly controversial circumstances, what Loro would have to say about this stat. he would sneer at it. What's that?
Sneer at it. But, I mean, surely we're missing the obvious one here, that this has got Keezy written all over it, surely, isn't it? Read it out in a kind of... I don't know whether he would do that on TV or would he save that for the podcast?
Receptions, Andy, between midfield and defensive lines.
So passing, then,
yeah.
Andy would say.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what the old school proper football men, Dave, would call that. We used to call that what? Getting the ball to feet in the hole.
Passing from defender to midfielder, that's what they go for, surely, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I don't think what it meant in old football money, just getting the ball to feet, back to goal.
I think to feet, yeah.
Yeah, to feet, absolutely. Well, I promised you Ali McCoist, and here he is. This is him commentating on Japan's winner against Germany, and it has all the elements, I think, of some cracking, almost old Andy Gray era great co-commentary. It's first of all, he identifies a massive problem with the goal defensively, and then my favourite bit of it, where he nearly takes something away from the finish and then decides not to. And this is the best not taking away something from the finish I've ever heard.
I need to see it again, but I'm thinking to myself, what's Shula's positioning? In the right back position, I need to see it again. It's just a long ball. Look, he's 2 yards deeper. What's his positioning? Shocking.
It's true.
What a great touch that is from Asano. Oh. What a fantastic thumping finish.
I know, I sound as though I'm taking him away from the finish and I don't want to, and I'm not, because that is brilliant.
The most emphatic not taking away from something I've ever heard in co-commentary history, Dave.
Really, really good. I actually was listening to this earlier on for one of the proper podcasts that we have here on the Athletic.
And, whoa.
Wow. Good luck with those tours.
I was going to say, those podcasts went on tour. All right.
I want to play it to you now. I'm going to play the clip that I put in earlier on. There is Ali McCoist. He makes a noise that lasts barely half a second, and the timing of it is just so good.
Absolutely sensational.
Just right in the split second after Matterface has said absolutely sensational, just the I don't think no one else does that.
Almost certainly on the replay of a goal, right?
Yeah,
because that's the only time you could make that noise. You wouldn't make it just contactless. It would have to be at the moment that ball is struck, because he would appreciate a good finish when he sees one, Dave. That's the whole point of him being there.
Certainly, yeah.
Great man. And just as people thought that John Hartson was worming his way into the cult co-commentator stakes, McCoist plants his flag on Qatari turf. let's move over to Ireland now. This is from Max Ryan, who's watching RTE. And here's George Hamilton weighing up the two bigger pictures of Japan's win over the Germans.
And now Japan playing down a marker as to how Asian football has come on. Or maybe how German football has regressed. A little bit of both,
you think. Could be. It's the biggest picture bit of both I've ever heard, Dave. I mean, those are two monolithic concepts coming together.
Yeah, and answering it himself.
Yeah, just obligatory.
Yeah.
It's obligatory. It's the same conclusion every time. Right, Matt Lyons has got a long-standing World Cup bone to pick. He wants to draw our attention to the iconic Bebeto goal celebration at USA 94. This is what he says. This is the most famous World Cup baby celebration, but it is not how you rock a baby. Should be hands together in the middle, elbows out, surely. It's got on my nerves for 28 years. Nick is right. He's right, isn't he? What they're doing is that what they're doing is essentially holding a cup of soup and rocking it from side to side, when really it should be a kind of...
Yeah, but are we not allowed to do? Can we allow a little bit of poetic license here? Because the way that Bebeto and Romario and someone else did it, there was a line of three or four of them, which would be quite awkward if you do the stand, if you do this.
Yeah, you'd be elbowing each other, wouldn't you?
You're getting elbows banging into each other and stuff. But if you're doing the way that they did it, then that's much easier to synchronise, I think.
Yeah, they could dovetail a little bit better. So we should have given Bebeto right of reply here, shouldn't we, Dave?
He was one of the there was an event in Doha, like a big thing where they rolled out a load of old World Cup legends, and he was there. So I missed my chance.
Wow. And I mean, do correct me if I'm wrong, Adam, as you are a parent, but I've always thought that the rocking was a tad too fast.
Oh yeah, completely. Yeah, completely.
I think that child would be disturbed if you were rocking it that quickly.
Well, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. But no, it's the baby rocking equivalent of a virtual ball that's just too big. It's saying, ref, I got it. And then you're doing these massive, I don't know, exercise ball. But yeah, plenty wrong with it. Matt Lyons, you were right to get in touch. Important philosophical question, especially in these times where games are coming thick and fast, from Mr. Plo, Nick. He says, at what point should somebody be taken off and wrapped in cotton wool?
So, right, so this needs to be a key player. The team needs to be, I think, at least three goals ahead.
Game
safe. Does there need... I mean, I think we're all thinking about Harry Kane here the other day. Does there need to be like a hint of an injury, or does it need... Can the cotton wool be brought out before there is any...
That's the crux of this question, isn't it, Dave? Why are they being wrapped in cotton wool? Injuries, but not necessarily a specific injury now.
Yeah, being wrapped in cotton wool is not something that you should do necessarily. It's not an effective treatment to an injury. No. It is to prevent the incident of anything breaking. And I think... One of our colleagues mentioned to me the other day that actually bubble wrap is more effective metaphor than
cotton wool.
It is
time to update it. I agree. Yeah. Lock him away in a local sort of storage facility.
In a large wooden box in cotton wool.
Exactly.
That's a bit Gangs of London, though.
Yeah, a little bit.
Harry Kane on a chair with some tape over his mouth in a big yellow self-storage in Bow.
You're not getting let out until the knockout stages.
We're just trying to prevent you getting injured.
Tremendous.
Suddenly stuck in the middle of you, starts playing in a kind of like...
Right, it's time for Barnard. Here she comes. She says, you've got to adjudicate on what the most first round tie in the group stage there's been so far. Dave, she says Denmark 0, Tunisia 0 has been the most first round tie in the group stage there's been so far. How do you feel about that?
I'm just literally looking to my right now as I look at my wall chart.
Wall chart, have you?
Yeah.
Handy for these purposes. I had to go to live score. It's quite annoying.
Well, we've discussed Mexico-Poland. Denmark-Tunisia, yes. I thought Senegal-Netherlands was quite a good one.
I mean, it's high-level group stage activity, but it is very group stage. I mean, it could be last 16, though, Senegal-Netherlands.
Yeah,
in the grand scheme of things, it could be a very last 16-y game.
Yeah, I think Barnard might be right.
Nick, my only fly in the ointment here for Barnard's theory is Switzerland 1, Cameroon 0, which I thought was really group stagey. I mean, what's more group stagey at the World Cup than Haris Seferovic having a golden chance to make the game safe for Switzerland in injury time, only to be denied by a heroic block from a Cameroon defender?
And Brile Mbolo scoring the goal as well, a player who I have absolutely no concept of at domestic level, but he pops up every couple of years at these international tournaments. My choice for this was very much leaning on your favourite World Cup is the first World Cup you remember theory, which is Uruguay against South Korea, who I think played each other in the group stage of Italian 90, which is my first World Cup, which is going on. I think is happening more or less as we record.
About to kick off.
About to kick off. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, we've timed this almost just right. Uruguay-South Korea, it feels like a really sort of fresh kind of game, actually, Dave. I'm well up for Uruguay-South Korea. I happily say this whilst everyone listens to this knowing that it was 0-0. But it's fine. Don't care. On paper, which is the most important thing about a World Cup group stage, it sounds great and I will watch it.
Yeah, a tasty encounter, I think.
It is tasty. Nick, you mentioned Breelin Bolo there. A lot of correspondence about his muted celebration for Switzerland's goal against Cameroon, against the country of his birth, of course. Don't really see... Nobody was suggesting it was controversial, by the way, but they were suggesting it was off script, is what I was saying, in the grand scheme of football. But it makes more sense, if anything. You know, 100%. There should be more ties to the country of your birth than a team you were once on loan at and don't want to piss their fans off.
Yeah,
He's doing it for himself, not for them.
Yeah, it's 100%. It's all tied up in the ideas of national identity and whatnot. Much more relevant than Daniel Sturridge refusing to celebrate against Bolton.
Right, a couple of absolute gems for you to finish. This is from Dear Fira. As Spain passed Costa Rica to death in Group E, BBC Radio 5 Live's Vicky Sparks upgrades their possession to the highest possible evolutionary level.
Spain just pushing, just probing, just so comfortable with this 3-0 lead, and the Lions share, the dinosaurs share a possession.
Nick has spat out an entire glass of water. He wasn't expecting dinosaurs share a possession. How'd you feel about it, Nick?
I mean, it kind of makes sense, I suppose. You know, the theory obviously being escalating, it's more than a lion's share. It's a... what else is... what's bigger than a lion? A dinosaur, there you go.
They're the biggest known creatures ever to walk the earth, I suppose. But what is the lion's... where does the lion's share...
it's only dinosaurs that walked the earth, isn't it? Nobody else has ever done that.
Yeah.
Good on them. Good luck to them.
Where does lion's share of possession come from? Is it because they are just like the kings of the jungle? They will have their share.
Yeah. It's a feared mythical creature.
In that respect, it's bang on. Yeah.
I mean, but it does hint, Nick, towards a potentially ominous future for Spain at this tournament.
Some dinosaurs are indeed herbivores, though. So
still greedy. Still eat a whole fucking tree, weren't they?
I suppose so. Yeah.
Yeah, but possession isn't inherently meat, is it?
No.
It could be vegetation.
Aggression.
As well.
Butter. Yeah. Not sure. Great stuff, though. Really enjoyed it. Next up, this is from listener Greg. Here's Vicky Sparks again. Just moments later, faced with an emergency pigeon situation, but crucially, still remembering that she's a football commentator on the radio.
Spain collect the ball outside their own penalty area. Did you see that? We just almost got taken out by a pigeon. There it is. Oh, off it goes again. Right to left. That was a close one.
That, Dave, is professional broadcasting. Superb.
Wonderful. Describing every element.
Right. It was
remembering she was on the radio. Yes, brilliant.
It was the kind of very natural segue from actual words into, we nearly got taken out by a pigeon. Very cricket territory. The pigeons are very very important part of cricket commentary.
If anything, Nick, I wanted more football commentary there. I wanted like a pigeon in its traditional colours of grey and white. Flying to it from the right to left.
Swooping down magnificently.
Honestly, that is up there with the best maintenance of composure and an emergency moment I've ever heard on radio football commentary. Finally, this is just genius, quite frankly. Both the fact that it happened, Dave, and the fact that someone spotted it happening. It was spotted indeed by Dominic Bliss. And this is why this particular song has become so ubiquitous at football matches. It was all leading up to this moment. Listen very carefully.
As the two captains meet the officials and the four stadium officials and the three in the VAR hub are from seven different nations. I'm not sure what common language they will have, but the main man is...
nice. One in a billion. It's a one in a billion situation. Zambia, best
known for... sensational stuff. I mean, do you think he heard that he was listening to the song?
And I don't think so.
Thought, that makes it better. Seven nations. Oh, no
chance. But
he would have made some reference to them being an army of officials, wouldn't he? If it was deliberate. So yeah.
Just for the stat to correlate with the song, Dave, I think this is now automatically the best World Cup that's ever been held as a result. I'm sorry about the other stuff, right. But this has happened.
This has pushed it over the line for you.
Yeah, a little bit.
The other stuff. Very, very footballer being asked about the World Cup in a press conference.
There are other podcasts,
stuff there from
it's
you.
Fine.
Keep football and politics apart, says Hurry.
Didn't say that when we had Keir Starmer on, did you?
Sorry, mate, we've got pigeons to talk about here, mate. How much time do you think we've got? We're 4 minutes into Uruguay versus South Korea, by the way. Sorry, Ben Foster there. Anyway, on that note, David Walker, thank you for a beautiful adjudication panel.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Nick Miller, and welcome home, all in one piece.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy Dapper Laughs. Thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll be back on Tuesday.
The Athletic.